It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
First in the Red Sea, the Ticonderoga class cruiser Monterey fired 30 Tomahawk land attack cruise missiles, and the Arleigh Burke-class destroyer Laboon fired 7 Tomahawks. In the North Arabian Gulf, the Burke-class destroyer Higgins fired 23 Tomahawks. In the Eastern Mediterranean, the French frigate Languedoc fired 3 missiles of their naval version of the Scat missile. Also in the Mediterranean, the Virginia-class submarine John Warner fired 6 Tomahawk missiles. In the air, 2 B-1 Lancer bombers fired 19 joint air-to-surface standoff missiles. In addition, our British allies flew a combination of tornadoes and typhoons and launched 8 storm shadow missiles. Our French allies flew a combination of Rafales and Mirages and launched 9 scalp missiles. Taken together, and as you can see from the graphic behind me, these attacks on multiple axes were able to overwhelm the Syrian air defense system. It's also important to note that we flew a variety of defensive counter-air, tanker, and electronic warfare aircraft in support of these operations. None of our aircraft or missiles involved in this operation were successfully engaged by Syrian air defenses, and we have no indication that Russian air defense systems were employed. We are confident that all of our missiles reached their targets. At the end of the strike mission, all our aircraft safely returned to their bases. We assessed that over 40 surface-to-air missiles were employed by the Syrian regime. Most of these launches occurred after the last impact of our strike was over.
Okay, that was Lieutenant General Ken McKenzie talking about the strike on Syria's chemical plants in Syria, Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, to stop their chemical weapons attacks, and that happened Friday night. Sandy Rios in the morning with you. You know, that really is the most important story of the weekend. Certainly not the only story. The news is filled, but sometimes it's hard to understand what's most important. I have to tell you, that could have started war. You know, Syria is being supported by Russia and Iran. Certainly Iran has been our enemy for a long time. Russia's morphing into more of an enemy. Things are getting more and more tense with them. I recognize that in many ways they were deeply our enemy, but I think basically because Russia has been more open since the Soviet Union broke up, that they're less inclined, they have more prosperity, they become more Western. I think they're less inclined to go to war with us, but they are strong allies of Syria. We had no idea what they were going to do. And so the strike on Friday night was a pretty courageous move on the president's part. And the thing that I find, he's getting very little criticism for that. I was listening to NPR on Saturday, All Things Considered. You know, they hate President Trump. It's a steady diet of hate President Trump. And yet they couldn't quite bring themselves to criticizing him because it was a cooperative effort between the English and the French. And you know, NPR is all about Europe, you know, the French. That's their gods, you know, the European leaders. They think that's the standard. And the European leaders joined in this exercise, so it put them in a tough position. And so we're going to talk a lot about that. So far, no response, at least military, from Russia, no response from Syria, other kinds of responses. But really, that was a very big deal, even though it happened probably while many of us were sleeping or going to bed. It was the weekend, not paying attention. These are the kinds of decisions that are being made by this president, by the new security advisor, John Bolton. And we're going to talk about all of that with Claire Lopez in just a few minutes. Claire is a national security expert, knows all about Syria. She's been saying for years that we need to attack their chemical weapons plants, and that's what they did on Friday night. So we'll talk to Claire in mere moments about what she thought about that strike and how it was conducted. Of course, another big issue that happened over last night politically, it's a big issue, and it is for our country too, for the former FBI director to go on television and to write a book that's, you know, what called a higher loyalty about integrity and honesty. And to go on an ABC program with George Stephanopoulos, who was so close to the Clintons, certainly not a centrist by any means, and, you know, criticize the president of the United States. Could I just say that FBI agents are sign an agreement when they join that they will not do books, they will not write about the things that they know. Even in post-retirement, they don't do this unless they get very special permission. And when you don't get permission, you get in big trouble. So it makes me wonder if Comey got permission for this early. I don't know. I doubt it. So that's just another thing. This is a breach of trust as an FBI agent. So former FBI Director Comey went on television. I'll just give you a few ideas of what he said, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more. Here's the first one. Trump is unfit for president morally.
Is Donald Trump unfit to be president?
Yes, but not in the way I often hear people talk about it. I don't buy the stuff about him being mentally incompetent or early stages of dementia. He strikes me as a person of above average intelligence who's tracking conversations and knows what's going on. I don't think he's medically unfit to be president. I think he's morally unfit to be president. The person who sees moral equivalence in Charlottesville, who talks about and treats women like they're pieces of meat, who lies constantly about matters big and small and insists the American people believe it, that person's not fit to be president of the United States on moral grounds. Our president must embody respect and adhere to the values that are at the core of this country, the most important being truth. This president is not able to do that. He is morally unfit to be president. This president does not reflect the values of this country.
Okay, so I want you to hear that because, of course, parts of that are true. The president has a terrible background in history in terms of his moral behavior. But the polar, the place in which how we view this president and what he's doing, the difference between the never Trumpers, the people that hate him like Comey, the people inside the deep state, you can just see the way they feel about him. And those of us that are supporting him can't disagree with some of the moral conclusions that Comey comes to. But then James Comey, who was the former director of the FBI, has breached his own character so thoroughly. An FBI director leaking to the press to sort of protect himself, an FBI director who put people in place like Andrew McCabe, which I'm going to get to that in just a second, second in command, who was, talk about a serial liar, a man like James Comey who defends Mrs. Clinton as though she is the gold standard when we know that she is, talk about serial lying. It's just puzzling. It's puzzling. And so then he goes on to talk about the sort of the election and how that played into his decision. Let's listen.
If you knew that letter would elect Donald Trump, you'd still send it?
I would. Down that path lies the death of the FBI as an independent force in American life. If I ever start considering whose political fortunes will be affected by a decision, we're done. We're just another player in the tribal battle.
And that's exactly what he did. Even by his own admission, that's exactly what he did. He thought that she was going to win, and that's why he thought that he should release that letter talking about there were more emails they had discovered that needed to be investigated before, just a few days before the election. He thought he was helping her because if he didn't do it, it would taint her election. You know, the bottom line on this, James Comey, while he's saying he wasn't political, was thoroughly political. He was completely political. That's what got him off base. You know, when we start making decisions based on things we shouldn't be basing them on, we waffle back and forth. We are not consistent. And I think that's what James Comey did. He was reading the tea leaves, and rather than doing his duty as FBI director, he was trying to help one way or the other the election. And he shouldn't have done it. So while he's making such great bones about not being political, he was exactly that. He was totally political. And one of the things he expresses is how, what deep regret that Mrs. Clinton is angry with him. He wishes he had a chance to explain. You know, this isn't just on its face. Does he not understand if you have to choose between the behavior of Mrs. Clinton and her history of lying, even going back to the Watergate days? She was fired from the investigative committee because she stole documents. She was a liar from the beginning. She is a student of Saul Alinsky. He's defending her sad that she's upset with him. And yet he's all about berating the president of the United States now because it's the same but different. You know, and then he gets very, very petty about President Trump and his appearance. This is probably the thing that I know that a former FBI agent, actually a CNN reporter, was talking about having interviewed several FBI agents who are just appalled at James Comey's petty attacks. And if you don't believe me, this is Chris Wallace, who, you know, I'm not a great fan of Chris. You probably figured that out, didn't you? Chris Wallace said this about James Comey's book and how he spoke about the president. Let's listen, clip 11.
The other thing that surprises me, frankly, is how the book is. Comey goes out of his way to say the president isn't as tall as he thought he was. He checked out the size of his hands the first time they shook hands, that he noticed that the president seemed to have little white half moons under his eyes. Maybe he had sun tanning goggles that he wore. You know, I think one could argue that by getting into the kind of political food fight, that James Comey has done more damage to his own reputation than he has to President Trump's.
Yes, I kind of think that's true. And Sarah Sanders, man, she blasted him. This is clip 3.
The American people see right through the blatant lies of a self-admitted leaker. This is nothing more than a poorly executed PR stunt by Comey to desperately rehabilitate his tattered reputation and enrich his own bank account by peddling a book that belongs in the bargain bin of the fixin' section instead of being remembered as a dedicated servant in the pursuit of justice. Like so many of his other colleagues at the FBI, Comey will be forever known as a disgraced partisan hack that broke his sacred trust with the President of the United States, the dedicated agents of the FBI, and the American people he vowed to faithfully serve. One of the president's greatest achievements will go down as firing Director James Comey.
You know, as I've said many times before, I think this is a good rule of thumb, and I'm just going to share it with you again. Don't look at what a man says, bad or good. Look at what a man does. Don't look at what a man says, look at what a man does. And I think that's very important. And I think many of us are looking at what President Trump has done, and we are appreciative. We're grateful that his inclinations seem to be, even though he hasn't lived it, pro-family, pro-morality. He has limited the engagement of transgenders in the military. He has protected life through, he's trying to defund Planned Parenthood. We could go on and on with the things that he's done, plus bringing strong military protection. He is the commander-in-chief. That's his primary job. You don't think North Korea was watching when we bombed Syria on Friday night? You don't think that sent a grand message to Kim Jong-un? Of course it did. And so we are seeing, in spite of whatever President Trump has done in the past, and certainly he has a bad history, I don't think he's guilty of everything they accuse him of. I think the dossier was completely unverified and salacious. That was interesting, too. George Stephanopoulos asked Comey, former FBI Director Comey, if he told President Trump where that salacious information came from. And he said, you mean that it was prepared and paid for by his political opponents? Oh, I didn't feel that was important. And he also said that one of the president's first responses was that he was concerned about Melania. So, Comey thought that was an odd response. I don't think that was an odd response at all. I think it says something about his love for his wife and his wanting to preserve that relationship. And so, you can watch that interview. I'm sure you'll see bits of it all day long today, the interview with James Comey and George Stephanopoulos. There was more to say about that, but we'll save it because coming up next, Claire Lopez is joining me, and Claire's going to be talking to us about that strike in Syria. What exactly did we hit? What exactly did we accomplish? And really, what will be the effect on America's ability to protect ourselves and also be a strong leader in the world? We'll talk about that with Claire. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart, with all my soul, that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull Season 1 and cancel the upcoming Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at AFA.net. That's AFA.net.
This is Matt from Memphis, Tennessee. I just wanted to thank Learning University because I used to not be better or smarter. Now I'm better and smarter.
Hey, this is J.J. Jasper, and we just have a blast on Trivia Friday.
We also call this program Learning University.
And it's one of the many programs you support through your partnership.
Here's the deal. At AFA and AFR, we're as busy as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Busy serving the Lord. We need your help during Share-a-thon.
I really appreciate AFR and all they do. Everything that I get to hear is just positive and encourages me in my daily walk as a truck driver.
It's so encouraging to hear how God is using American Family Radio. Please partner with us during our three-day Share-a-thon beginning tomorrow on AFR.
Thank y'all for all you do.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Kristen Ware spent three seasons on the sidelines cheering for the Miami Dolphins, but she declined to try out for a fourth season, claiming she faced discrimination because of her Christian faith. Ms. Ware says her trouble started when she posted a photograph of her baptism. She became a target of ridicule and harassment at the hands of the cheerleading staff. That's according to a complaint filed with the Florida Commission on Human Relations. Ms. Ware said she was also mocked because she planned to wait for marriage to have sex. The NFL and the Miami Dolphins issued statements denying they discriminate based on religious beliefs, but the Dolphins did punish Ms. Ware's supervisor. You know, if football players can celebrate their faith on the field, cheerleaders ought to be able to celebrate their faith off the field. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
With yesterday's military action, our message was crystal clear. The United States of America will not allow the Assad regime to continue to use chemical weapons. Last night, we obliterated the major research facility that it used to assemble weapons of mass murder. I spoke to the president this morning, and he said if the Syrian regime uses this poisonous gas again, the United States is locked and loaded. When our president draws a red line, our president enforces the red line. The United States is deeply grateful to the United Kingdom and France for its part in the coalition to defend the prohibition of chemical weapons. We worked in lockstep. We were in complete agreement. Last night, our great friends and indispensable allies shouldered a burden that benefits all of us.
That was Ambassador Nikki Haley. Boy, of all the appointments that President Trump has made, she might be the star. I'm not sure, but Nikki is just Ambassador Haley, shall I say. Has been a bulldog. She reminds me of Claire Lopez, help me. Who was the ambassador to the UN that was such a bulldog, a woman in the 60s, 70s?
Oh, Jean Kirkpatrick, maybe,
Yes, Jean Kirkpatrick. I think she's channeling Jean Kirkpatrick, which is just amazing. Anyway, Claire, thanks for joining us. Claire is the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. And Claire, you know a lot about what's going on in Syria. You've been saying for months, you've said on this show, maybe even over a year, that we should bomb Syria's chemical weapons plant, not civilians, but the plants, and destroy their capabilities. So what actually did we take out on Friday night?
Well, there were three primary targets, as I understand it, that were targeted by the United States, Britain, and France. And they were two military bases, but the primary target, according to General Dunford, speaking for the Joint Chiefs of Staff on Friday night, the primary target was a place called the Scientific Studies and Research Center, SSRC, a kind of a campus of buildings and labs outside of Damascus, which was the primary hub for R&D on both chemical and biological weapons for the Syrian regime. And there, Iranian scientists, North Korean, Russian, and Syrian, and I suspect probably Hezbollah too, were engaged in R&D on the most horrific chemical and biological weapons agents known to man. That is the place that I've been calling for a very long time, just as you say, Sandy, for a long time to be wiped off the face of the map. The facility in the after photos looks that it has been pretty well destroyed. As I understand it, upwards of 70 missiles hit that facility on Friday night.
You know, it's interesting because CNBC has a story, and this is the title, Claire. It says, "Why the U.S. claims of demolishing Syria's chemical weapons capabilities may be pure PR." And they go back and they interview former Pentagon officials. And they say that, first of all, there's no way you could tell what was done. It's an overstatement, the damage that we did, et cetera, et cetera. I just wondered what you think about that.
Well, certainly we have not obliterated the entire capability of the Damascus regime to conduct R&D to produce or deploy chemical or biological weapons. Certainly there are other facilities, protected facilities, underground facilities. There are stockpiles of munitions loaded with this stuff in other places. That's all true, certainly. But because the SSRC was the hub of the R&D effort, built in 1971, goes back that far, and it was the place where all these other regimes, people have to understand, the Iranians, the North Koreans, and the Russians were all there helping Syria. It not only took out a very important capability in terms of R&D for these heinous programs, BW and CW, but sent a message to those other rogue regimes as well that violations, and here's the important part, violations of the Chemical Weapons Convention, there's a Biological Weapons Convention too, but in this case, CWC and the OPCW, Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, violations will not be tolerated. This is not stepping into the internecine Syrian civil war. This is not taking sides. This is not an attempt to oust Bashar al-Assad. This is the enforcement as a member signatory state to the outlawing of chemical weapons as, like biological weapons, uniquely heinous, and we cannot permit their development or their use. That's what this was about. It was a very significant blow. Don't mean to say that the entire capability is gone. It's certainly not. But this was the hub. This was the center of operations.
Well, and spoke volumes to North Korea, to Iran, and to Russia as well, too, Claire, about what this president's willing to do. And, you know, that's worth gold right there. And to be able to do this without, as far as we can tell, without the loss of civilian life is pretty amazing, don't you think?
Well, that was the point. It was very specifically targeted, as I said, against this facility and two other military bases. And as I understand it, there was communication between the White House and Moscow before the strike. Now, I don't know if the entire complex at the SSRC was evacuated ahead of the strike. If it was not, and if there were some rogue Iranian, Hezbollah, North Korean, or Russian scientists still there working on this awful stuff. By the way, what I'm talking about is weaponized strains, maybe genetically modified strains, of anthrax, Ebola, cholera, plague, smallpox on the BW side, and horrific advanced nerve agents like sarin and like VX, one single drop of which sends a person, a little baby, into paroxysms of muscle twitching and death. That's what they were working on. If some of those scientists were still at that place when the missiles came in, well, too bad.
Claire, we've talked quite a bit, I think, we did quite a bit when President Obama was in office and this whole issue of Syria and chemical weapons came up, and there were this is just my view of it. There were real doubts initially when there were some chemical weapon strikes, I think 5 years ago, about whether this was Bashar al-Assad, whether it was the Islamists faking attacks and faking some of this stuff. And so, look, I don't know how you felt about this because I honestly can't remember, but I just remember there was less than enthusiasm about Barack Obama going in and hitting Bashar al-Assad because we weren't clear who was doing what. But somehow things have changed. So clarify that for me, if you could.
Sure. Well, to begin with, certain capabilities reside with nation states, and other capabilities may be more widespread. So if you're talking about an advanced nerve gas like sarin or VX, that is a nation state capability. Subnational Islamic terror groups do not have that capability. The second thing to know is that in the Syrian battlefield space right now, the only parties with air capability, air assets, be it planes, drones, or helicopters, are state actors. The rebels do not have air capability. We have not seen the others in the theater, that is, the Iranians, the Turks, or the Russians, using air assets to deliver chemical weapons. They've not done that. Only Damascus has done that. And so when you have reports, credible, of air assets, helicopters or planes in this case, dropping these barrel bombs and other munitions on civilian areas containing chemical weapons, either chlorine, which is more widely available, or sarin, that's the regime, and there's nobody else doing that. There's nobody else that has that capability. Now, the other thing to know is that air flights, airplane routes and are tracked by any number of intelligence services. Anything in the air that flies in the Syrian battlefield is tracked. And so not just the planes themselves and their routes being tracked, but the communications between those planes and their bases are being recorded and tracked. And so it's pretty well known when a Syrian air asset takes off from a Syrian air base and then shows up over some civilian area and drops chemical weapons. There's just simply no question about that. Now, if you're talking about something that is deployed on the ground, we do know that opposing rebel militias have gotten their hands on chlorine and used that multiple times. It's an industrial chemical widely used, many different applications from cleaning products to swimming pools. It's widely available. And rebels militias have used chlorine, as well as Damascus.
Okay, so that sort of explains things a little bit. The rebels that are being attacked or targeted by Assad, are they Islamists? Who are these rebels that are still fighting him?
I would never use the word Islamist. It's a euphemism. There's no such thing as Islamism or Islamist. There is Islam, and those who are faithful to it, those who obey Sharia, are called Muslims. But the rebels primarily, in opposition to Bashar al-Assad's horrific human rights abusing rule in Damascus, span the gamut. You've got very strong militias like the Al-Qaeda affiliates that have undergone several name changes, but now mostly are known as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. You've got militias supported by Turkey, for example, Ahrar al-Sham and others. You've got the remnants of the Islamic State still there, still around, and myriad other sub-groups and militias. A lot of them are aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood. A lot of them are aligned, as I said, with Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State. And so they're all jihadis. The whole lot of them are jihadis.
And that's why Erdogan was so happy about this strike then. That makes sense to me.
Well, Erdogan has a particular and I think rising aggressive agenda, both in the Syrian battle space and more broadly regionally. But his number one objective is to attack the Kurds and ensure that they do not form any kind of an entity, autonomous zone or state of their own. But he also has flip-flopped during the course of these last 5 years, originally calling for the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad, then for a time not calling for the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad, but primarily the regime of Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Ankara is a rising neo-Ottoman jihad regime whose primary objective in that battle space is the Kurds. If I couldn't put a quick plug in real fast here, the Center for Security Policy will be publishing a book later this week. It is called Ally No More, and it is about Turkey. It is comprised of chapters by 10 different authors. Stay tuned for that at centerforsecuritypolicy.org.
Okay, great. Thanks for that, Claire. Trying to talk and think too quickly. We'll put that on our Facebook page when it comes out and do an interview on that. Thanks for that tip.
We just
have a couple of minutes left. I have to ask you what your personal assessment is of the difference having John Bolton as National Security Advisor as opposed to H.R. McMaster.
Oh, night and day. You know, we at the center have long been championing the appointment of Ambassador John Bolton to the National Security Council. We couldn't be more pleased that President Trump has now named him to be the new National Security Advisor. He is already beginning to clean house of so many of the Obama-era holdovers. We're looking forward to supporting him and working with him in any way that we possibly can, and think that this is just a change much for the better.
You know, I have to say, Claire, this is one of the big hits against John Bolton is that he hangs out with people like the icky Center for Security Policy people, which, of course, makes me laugh and makes me very happy. But there is a big change at the White House, thank God, because these are crucial times. And so as you look, we have a minute left, as you look at how President, less than a minute, 30 seconds, President Trump's, let's do this, scorecard on how he's been handling national security. How about that as our closing statement here?
Well, I think that he has proven himself very adept. He came in without government experience, without foreign policy experience. It's taken a while. We're seeing very important and key changes. I think the actions in Syria are testament to that. Some of the new appointments, and as well, Mike Pompeo being appointed new Secretary of State. His hearing was last week. These are all positive and good changes. We think that the president is on the right track.
I do too, and what a relief. we've worried for months, really, as we've seen things unfold and bad advisors in the White House. So thank God for all of this. Claire Lopez, Center for Security Policy. Thank you, Claire. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sandy.
All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. China's president struck a conciliatory tone when he promised to cut China's import tariffs and ease restrictions on foreign ownership in its auto industry, as President Trump has zeroed in on America's trade imbalance with China. China currently imposes a 25% tariff on imported cars, plus an additional 10% super luxury tariff on vehicles priced over $200,000. Don't look now, but it seems like President Xi has blinked in the face of President Trump's tariff stance. China will dance if they have the right partner.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness.
I'll be the song for you. I'll be the symphony.
The music of Sasha's Song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us through the years?
Produced by John Ennis of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in a flood of doubt and pain. For he is able.
Available on CD at afastore.net.
I feel like AFR has personally taken me under their wings and has been educating me to be a stronger, more compassionate soldier in this good fight. I'm so grateful to the Lord for all of you. I now can hear the word preached several times a day and be encouraged, convicted when I need to be, and fed the truth in love.
Hello, this is David Jeremiah, and I'm so thankful that my program, Turning Point, is aired on American Family Radio. Because we are both committed to the same thing, being a voice of sanity, hope, and faith in a world desperately in need of all three. Won't you keep American Family Radio strong through your prayers and financial support?
We're so thankful for how God is using American Family Radio. Please consider partnering with us during our 3-day share-a-thon starting tomorrow on AFR.
Pray the Lord will continue to bless your ministry and keep it strong until He returns. God bless you.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This weekend's elaborately choreographed, devastating, and expensive aerial bombardment of Syria by the United States, Great Britain, and France highlighted an alarming reality. The three facilities targeted represent just part of Syrian dictator Bashar Assad's chemical weapons arsenal. And Assad's arsenal likely pales compared to those of his allies, Russia, Iran, and China. And none of them is supposed to exist. All four nations are parties to the Chemical Weapons Convention that we were told would rid the world of chemical arms. It turns out, the CWC only rid the free world of the one proven means to prevent the use of these terrible weapons, the threat of in-kind retaliation. Faced with the present and growing danger posed by these weapons of mass destruction in the hands of unfree nations, the United States should reconsider its posture of unilateral chemical disarmament. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. AFA has been doing some really powerful things lately. And I just have to pause to tell you, our share-a-thon starts tomorrow, but you know that we're in the business of trying to just be salt and light. And we can't fight all the battles, but we try to take on ones that we think are effective. And this the latest one is really urgent. I was watching Netflix last night, actually. Hold on a second. I was watching it last night, and I saw a commercial for 13 Reasons Why. and was, of course, reminded of this I hate to call it a campaign. It just sounds so, I'd like to think of a new word. Our all-out effort to stop a series on Netflix, which encourages suicide, glorifies suicide, which three girls, at least three girls we know, have taken their lives as a response to watching the series. And one of them is Anna Bright, 14 years old. And we have been featuring, there's another bad word for this. We've been making the video with her parents available so you can hear and heard their tragic story. The dad finding her, a dad having killed herself. She is a beautiful young, she even looks pre-adolescent. She looks so young to me. It's just shocking. She binged watched 13 Reasons Why, and then she took her life just like the heroine in that show did. And so we're trying to get Netflix to listen to reason. Tim Wildman, our president, wrote the chief executive officer for Netflix, asked for a meeting, told them about Anna, told them about the other girls. They wouldn't even respond. No response. So you know what? When that happens, the people need to speak. And that's what we're trying to do, is to get you to speak up. If you go to AFA.net, that's AFA.net, please sign, add your name to this petition or letter to get to Netflix to have them stop this. We also have, and ask them to stop, you know, production of this next series, the next year of 13 Reasons Why, the second season. And so there are also some great tools at that at AFA.net under the 13 Reasons Why section to help provide information if there's some possibility of suicide that you're seeing in your family or in your life. There are some great resources there, plus the Suicide Prevention Lifeline. So I hope that you will go to AFA.net and help us reach Netflix in the most powerful way possible, because we're trying to save lives. That's what it amounts to, trying to save lives. And by the way, it's just about 2 years that we've been doing this Boycott Target campaign. We have 1.5 million signatures on this. You may know, if you don't know, in Chicago just last month, another child was a man forced his way into the women's bathroom and exposed himself to a little girl in Target. Now, this is just, look, there's been an epidemic of this, really, at Target. And yet Target won't listen either. They've just doubled down. They've opened up their restrooms, their dressing rooms. You can be any gender, doesn't matter. You can just walk right in. And that's what's causing this. And we're trying to get them to stop. Simple as that. So we'd love for you to go to AFA.net, to the Target section of that, AFA.net, and sign your name to that petition if you haven't done that already. This is the kind of thing that American Family Association is trying to do. We are trying to stop some really bad stuff. Again, we can't stop it all, but you know what? I kind of think when people start seeing that they can affect change, it's contagious, and they start affecting more change. And so why don't you join us? That's something that's small. You can add your name. That's a very small thing, but it's, you know, I start each show with say something, do something. Well, you could do that, couldn't you? You could do that. You could help us weigh in against Netflix and this series, and you could help us boycott Target. And you can also help by not going there. You should be surprised how other stores have nice things that you don't have to buy. So you didn't have to go to Target to do that. The other thing that I want to bring to your attention is that AFA Action sent out an alert just last Friday encouraging Congressman Jim Jordan to run for Speaker of the House. Now, Paul Ryan has said he's going to step down. He's not going to run anymore for Congress starting in the fall, but he's planning on keeping his Speaker's position. Until then, there are pressures coming upon him to step down. There's sort of a campaign ensuing, and Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise seem to be vying for the position of Speaker. Kevin McCarthy is particularly lobbying President Trump to support him. I am trying to stop that, I'll tell you, me personally, because Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise, if I just gave you one reason, it would be that they both supported, whipped, and voted for the omnibus spending bill, which fully funds Planned Parenthood and does all of the other really bad multiple things that the Democrats, the left in the House, wanted. And you just can't take that away from them. They've been in leadership during times when so many good things could have been done, like money to build a wall. Remember that? Build the wall. We want them to do that, but they're not doing it. Stop illegal immigration. They haven't done it. Stop Obamacare. They haven't done it. So we could go on and on. We don't need leaders who are in the camp of Paul Ryan. We just don't. So AFA Action is asking, by the way, we'll put their action alert on our Facebook page so that you can actually see it and you can respond accordingly. So there are a lot of things, you know, there are a lot of reasons that you might want to come join us at AFA Action. Sign up for the alerts because, you know, you can really make a difference that way. And we need you to do that because it is we the people, you know, it's we the people. All right, the other thing that came out on Friday was the Inspector General's report just on the issue of Andrew McCabe. J. Christian Adams was on with Judge Jeanine, and he said some things that I think make it simple to understand. Let's listen.
We will see whether justice is blind, Judge, because there's people like Scooter Libby and General Mike Flynn who got in trouble for far less. The number two man at the FBI repeatedly lying under oath to FBI agents, to the Inspector General, leaking information, coordinating a political hit job with his friend on texts we know about. I mean, it really opens up your eyes to how politicized things became under Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch, and Barack Obama. What's really interesting in the IG report, Judge, is one thing that hasn't been reported is it says in there that the principal deputy associate attorney general, who's a very high-ranking person at the Obama Justice Department, made a phone call just a few weeks before the election to McCabe, telling him to shut down the Hillary Clinton Foundation criminal investigation. That was the most staggering thing in the report to me. He's not named in the IG report. That's part of the mystery. I suspect somebody will figure out who it was. Bill Baer was a principal deputy AG around that time. Maybe it was him, maybe it wasn't. But the point is, this is a top-level DOJ official called the FBI and said, shut down the Hillary Foundation investigation. What sort of Justice Department do we have a couple weeks before the election that presidential political appointees are calling the number two guy at the FBI, essentially saying, give Hillary a pass? That's in the IG report. That's the real bombshell. And then you have McCabe, and that was the reason. That was the reason that McCabe started leaking through his friend, Lisa Page, to the Wall Street Journal, because they wanted to throw the principal deputy associate under the bus. That's the terminology that Page used. As you now know, we have James Comey, the number one guy at the FBI. You have Andrew McCabe, the number two guy at the FBI, who are busy leaking stuff to either make them look good, make Hillary look better, or in some cases, make Trump look crazy. And that's what we had when we had a political FBI who injected themselves into that presidential election.
All right, there's so much to say about that. So what we found out from the Inspector General's report, and by the way, that the Inspector General himself, Michael Horowitz, described this as kind of a sidebar. This is not the main dessert, if you want to call it that. This is not the main report. The main reports will probably come out in May, and they will involve, as we understand it, investigations into the FBI and to the Department of Justice and their politicization under Barack Obama. That's going to be amazing. This was kind of what came out of it was this investigation of Andrew McCabe when they realized how corrupt. And I want to just tell you some more details about this, if I might. The Judicial Watch issued a statement on the Inspector General's report that was issued on McCabe on Friday. And this is what they say. Attorney General Jeff Sessions was wholly justified in firing former FBI Director Andrew McCabe. The IG report released today portrays McCabe as a serial liar. When regular people lie to the FBI, they get slapped with felony charges. The IG report also presents additional evidence that the Obama DOJ sought to shut down FBI investigations of the Clinton Foundation. This is yet one more reason to either reopen or reinvigorate the Clinton Foundation pay-to-play probes. And once again, the IG report shows that the FBI has been covering up Andrew McCabe's text messages. The messages should have been turned over to Judicial Watch on a FOIA litigation, but we haven't received even one of McCabe's text messages. The FBI corruption and cover-up didn't end, unfortunately, with James Comey's well-deserved firing. One of the things they point out is that we found out in the Inspector General's report, remember that I've said this so many times, that McCabe's wife was given $700,000 or thereabouts by Terry McAuliffe, who was the sort of the fundraiser for the Clintons. He had been many years hence. He's now the governor of Virginia, and just a money man, right-hand man for the Clintons. And we know that this insiders know that he was helped a great deal to get the governorship for Virginia by the Clintons, their buddies. And so he recruited McCabe's wife with a $700,000 pledge to get her to run for Senate. So she did that. And as I've said to you before, FBI agents are not able, in fact, Comey referred to this kind of in his conversation with George Stephanopoulos, are not allowed to be political. They're not allowed to use resources to campaign for people. They can vote privately, but they can't campaign and use even the appearance of their role as an FBI agent or employee. I don't know about the employees, but the agents as an endorsement of one candidate or another. So given that backdrop, and given the fact that Andrew McCabe's wife received $700,000 from a Clinton operative, so this is what Judicial Watch reports. Judicial Watch uncovered that McCabe, despite massive contributions from Clinton ally Terry McAuliffe in his wife's 2015 political campaign, did not recuse himself from the Clinton email investigation until just a week before the 2016 presidential election. So in other words, while he was receiving all this money from Terry McAuliffe for his wife, and by the way, we know that McCabe actually was at the meeting where Terry McAuliffe offered this money and they made the deal. So he was not exactly absent or, you know, disinterested. This is not something his wife went off and did without his knowledge. Not at all. And then at the same time, he's the one charged with investigating Mrs. Clinton's email. And he did not recuse himself. That's the point of that. Separately, the FBI failed to turn over any McCabe text messages in a final response September 2017 Freedom of Information lawsuit. By the way, Judicial Watch filed that on behalf of Jeffrey Danik, a 30-year veteran, retired FBI supervisory special agent. See, there are a lot of people that have complaints about McCabe that you don't know about yet. And there are a lot of people speaking out, a lot of agents whose names you don't know yet, talking about the corruption in the FBI. So I want to mention this other thing while I have 1 minute left here. You know that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, pardoned Scooter Libby Friday. That was another big news story. Scooter Libby was the chief of staff for Vice President Dick Cheney. You may recall that he was vilified, as are so many, there's like a serial vilifying going on of conservatives, and Scooter was certainly vilified. He was accused of outing a CIA operative known as, her name was Valerie Plame. I could tell you volumes about that story. But the bottom line is that when those charges were brought, and by the way, James Comey and I believe Bob Mueller knew that Scooter Libby was not the leaker on that. And so did the attorney the special prosecutor who brought the charges against Scooter knew that it was a former member of Obama's cabinet who leaked this story about Valerie Plame being an undercover operative who is now working at the CIA. So nevertheless, they went after Scooter Libby and they convicted him. He lost his law license. His life was really pretty much destroyed. It was a tragedy. It's sort of like what they've done to Michael Flynn. So now President Trump has pardoned Michael Flynn. And I think, you know, some are saying, and I believe this is true, as a signal maybe to those like his attorney who are coming under attack and scrutiny from the Mueller probe to just kind of remind them that he has the ability and the authority and the willingness to use his pardon abilities as president, his pardon powers, to sort of upset the apple cart where the deep state is concerned. There's more to say about Scooter Libby, boy. I could talk tons about Valerie Plame. Talk about disingenuous. And a liar, she and her husband, Joe Wilson. It's just an amazing story. Do I ever remember it well? Scooter Libby was destroyed because they allegedly were harmed, which they were not. But more on that on a different day. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.